It's Gaudete Sunday, which means to rejoice. But I will preface this sermon by saying, I'm having a hard time rejoicing this year. Imagine, if you will, a long procession of refugees walking along a desert highway, war-weary, haggard, with no possessions but what they have with them. Hunger and thirst churn their thoughts of a meager meal as the sand blows into their tearful eyes. Exhaustion weighs down their slogged steps. Grief sticks in their scratchy throats, grown hoarse from crying. Their kids in tow have no memory of the former place, the place known as home. Even the adults have sepia-clouded memories of the former place, faded with an expanse of time and the haunts of devastation that have intervened since they were forced from their homes, which no longer stand. But soon, they will be told to return. Return to what, you might ask? All that is left is rubble and the remains of those who died in it. Now, you may think that I am describing the present-day refugees from the Gaza war, and the images we've seen in recent weeks could certainly match what I've just described. The truth is, it could be any of the more than 140 million refugees currently displaced across the globe, all seeking to return home, whatever that might mean to them, to those Syrians, or Rohingyans, or Sudanese, or Venezuelans, or. Imagine every American living west of the Mississippi River forced to leave their homes. That's 140 million. I could be speaking of any of those current days, but what I'm actually describing here, friends, is a group of people who lived 2,500 years ago, who were forced into exile from their home, which was destroyed, only to be told later, years later, go back, return. That the description I've just offered you seems so apt today. Even today, should tell us something of the human condition that continues to haunt and do harm to one another, often in the name of vengeful justice or religious righteousness, or even in the name of God, but always, always befouled by some poison of hatred that justifies the suffering. Are we really any different? The people about whom I am speaking specifically had been hauled off from their homes that lay just a few miles from present-day Gaza, forced into exile into Babylon after the imperial force, the military forces, laid waste to their cities in Judea, their homes, even their houses of prayer. They left piles of rubble behind them, and a life's worth of possessions they could not salvage. Psalm 137 laments, "By the waters of Babylon we sat down and wept. Their music making ceased because there was no mirth in their souls any longer about which to sing." But then a crusty prophet comes along and stands up on a stump to remind them that God has not forsaken them. God has not forgotten them. His face is rugous and dark baked from the desert sun. But his voice is full-throated and fiercely confident that God is up to something with these people. Last week, we heard Isaiah tell the people that God directed the hosts of heaven, to comfort my people. These angelic creatures who sing the eternal song of praise to God, holy, holy, holy Lord, you know it, you sing it too. They are given a particular charge to serve these war-weary people, to comfort them, my people. The word comfort is significant. Comfort is more than consoling, more than reassuring. Comfort means to fortify them, to strengthen them for the journey about to ensue. There is in this a sinewy hope unfolding before them. And desert roads once used by ranks of military might will be run smooth and made straight for God's work at hand. Oh, the people are dubious at first, understandably so, because the dynamics of worldly power haven't really changed that much, have they? And yet, the Babylonian conquerors are overthrown by the Persians. The Persians are just as militaristic. But along comes a new king, King Cyrus of the Persians, whom Isaiah calls actually God's anointed one, the one to do God's purpose, the only non-Jew in all the Bible called such. And Cyrus decides he will allow the exiles to return home. And not only that, he will help pay for the restoration of their cities. He will help pay for the restoration of their temple from the coffers of the imperial government. Could it be that with God, all things really are possible? And then in today's passage from Isaiah, the people having returned home to Judea hear the prophet's declaration of good news for them to rejoice, because God has designs for the restoration of their cities and their lives and seems willing to use unconventional means to see it realized. Folks, if there is anything about Christianity and our understanding of the coming of Christ, it is unconventional. At the heart of this good news is the proclamation of Jubilee, a time of intentional healing of broken relationships, a time of release from usurious economic burdens, a time of healing the brokenhearted, a time of comforting those who mourn, a time to proclaim liberty to the captives, a time to build upon the rubble, to raise up the former devastations, to repair the ruined cities. It shall be the project of God, and God's people are called into it as well. And so the prophet is saying to you and me this morning, put on your garments of salvation. Feel the oil of gladness seep into your parched pores. Don your mantle of praise. Pick up your instruments once more. This is the day that God has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Today, the theme is to rejoice. But I will tell you, I am having a hard time rejoicing with abandon this year, with all the vivid images of war-weary refugees. And then the prophet shows up. I'm belaboring this story from 2,500 years ago, not as an historical exercise, But because I believe with all my heart that God is in the midst of the rubble back then and in the midst of the rubble today and is calling us to the work of restoration beyond whatever propaganda and demagoguery and hatred there might be, God is calling us to something new. God is seeking comfort for beloved ones who are oppressed and devastated and held prisoner to the ways of war that all too often corrupt and destroy the creatures of God. So here it is. In October, the United States government sent $14 billion to the state of Israel for military weaponry. We made it. That decision in just a few days. If we can send $14 billion for military in short order, it seems to me that we could send $14 billion to serve the cause of restoration for those whose lives have been devastated, destroyed. I'm just saying. However you may choose to parse this current conflict, and for the record, let me be clear, I believe there is not a soul in the Holy Land who has been spared the grief. There is not a soul in the Holy Land that is beyond the bounds of being claimed as part of God's people. If we don't believe that, we need to close up the place, put a for sale sign out in front, and quit. God's people are all people. The prophet is telling us that again today. However you choose to parse the current conflict, God is saying, comfort, comfort, my people. My people. My people. Strengthen them for a journey on God's highway that traverses the desert desolation of war and death to return home to a place of peace, a city of peace where God is inviting all people to live. This is a time for us to proclaim the Jubilee of God and find our places to join in the heavenly chorus as we sing our praises of joyful hope that God will use unconventional means to accomplish this promised vision, that God will use us to accomplish this vision. It will take fierce courage to hold on to such a hope. But the prophet is speaking to us here today, friends. And we do not get a pass. Not as Americans, not as global citizens of means, and certainly not as people of faith who have a vocation of trusting that God has come to dwell among us. So courageously put on your garment of salvation and rejoice that God is stirring in our midst. Let God sanctify you for this work entirely. The one who calls you is faithful. So prepare the way of the Lord. Comfort God's people. Sing your hopeful praises and pray. Good Lord, pray. Come, O come, Emmanuel. Be with us.